2015, an elite DFS Army Commando unit formed to bring high-level DFS strategy to the masses. Today, hated by DFS sharks and lineup sellers alike, they continue their quest to turn Joe into DFS pro.
Tuesday PGA DFS podcast presented to you by DFSArmy.com. Be sure to go on DFSArmy.com today. Come check us out with our premium content. After hearing the pod, I'm sure you'll want to at least go give that a gander, try out a free week or something. And remember to use promo code TACO on sign up for a lifetime 10% off. That was a quick plug. Just remember to do that to support the podcast. And if you're watching on YouTube, leave a like on the video. Maybe say something in the comments. Who knows? But moving right along to this event, just got so much to cover here. It's a stupid three-course event where, you know, guys like me really, the statisticians really do not like this event very much for obvious reasons. Two of the three courses on there do not have any shot link data. But despite all that, we're heading into the tournament with a somewhat of a clairvoyance of what exactly we're looking for here. This tournament has some real extremes I can point out statistically, and I don't even need the shot link data for what are the two easiest courses on tour. in the Nicklaus tournament course and the La Quinta Country Club. Those are two of the three courses that make up the what was formerly known as the Bob Hope Classic, but now it's known as the Desert Classic. So we're headed to the desert, and we've got three courses to go on. We could talk a good bit about them. One of the courses we'll be playing at twice. You'll play at the stadium course on the last round, pretty much no matter what. And that's also where all the shot link data is, so that's where the most of the TV crew we'll be following there at the stadium course and all that, but that's actually the hardest course here. I mean, it's the 13th easiest course on the PGA Tour, but it's the other two courses that that really tickle our fancy this week. They're the two easiest courses on the tour. We only get to play them once each, but a couple of years ago, Adam Hadwin made the best that he could out of his visit to La Quinta Country Club, dropping a sweet 59. Without eagles on that course. It's just so easy. Where to begin? They're all par 72s that are ridiculously short in length. Especially, well, La Quinta. It's just barely over 7,000 yards long. And it's not really punishing in any way. You know, guys hit the fairways at about 65% clip here. They're not afraid to bomb it out, although they do bomb it out significantly more on the Nicklaus Tournament Stadium. Nicklaus Tournament course, where guys average 297 yards off the tee. They're just free to bomb it away as they please at that course. And yeah, there are just so many things for me to go over here. I'm just going to start railing them off here. So when looking at these courses, in comparison to other courses on the PGA Tour, which of course you can get a glance at if you check out our premium product, DFSArmy.com. Promo code TACO. The research station, I've been working tirelessly on this thing. I've revamped it completely for this season. This is the research station 3.0, and it just added some cool features today and yesterday that are really going to push us forward into the awesomeness realm. But this is actually a feature that I've been using since last year here, the tournament comparison tab, where you can compare all of the tournaments played, or all the courses that have been played over the last 3 years, and compare them to each other. Right now I'm looking at, there are a lot, usually with some of these courses, when I go to break them down, might have one or two things that it's like top five in or something, nothing really too crazy. I know we just gone out in the Hawaii swing where they had, Kapalua and courses like that, they have, you know, they're really intricate. Like, yeah, the, you know, mostly just Kapalua. That's a weird course, par 73 and all that stuff. But yeah, moving along to the best part of the West Coast swing, California. You know, Hawaii is all right, but California, pretty cool for some golf. Even Arizona too. I'll count them as secondhand cool here. But yeah, just getting into these courses right here. Let me just tell you a little bit about them. First off, I already said that the scores are the lowest. I mean, they averaged 3 strokes under par just for everybody. Over the last 3 years here, it's been quite the show. If you look at the winners here, you know, it turned to the Career Builder, well, the Humana Challenge, that's what it was. It turned into the Humana Challenge in 2012, ending the Bob Hope Classic's historic run of one of the weirder courses, or one of the weirdest tournaments that we've ever really had. It's the only 5-round tournament. Thank God we don't have any more of those. I turned into the Humana Challenge in 2012. And since then, the lowest score, or the lowest winning score, was Hudson Swafford's win 2 years ago over Adam Hadwin, denying him the victory there after his 59, with a 20 strokes under par victory. Every single score has been higher than that. You saw, Patrick Reed here, win here, 28 strokes under par. Brian Gay won here, 25 strokes under par. Little Mark Wilson, 24 strokes under par. Jason Duffner, 25 strokes under par. And that was in a playoff, too. So people are going to be scoring out here. You're going to want to look for your birdie seekers, your birdie gainers, obviously. I mean, it's almost sort of a hybrid between the no-cut and the standard cut event. There is a cut, but you get a free extra round for everybody. And, yeah, this tournament has seen quite a rotation of courses, honestly. Up until 2016, we played at the PJ West Palmer Private Course quite often here. We've also played at the PJ West Nicholas Private Course, Silver Rock Resort, the Classic Club. All since 2007, we played all these different courses. We recently just picked up the tournament course back in 2016. That's where I'm getting the data from, mostly this, the 2016-2017 iterations of this crazy fun tournament, this totally not a disaster to watch on TV pro-am, where a third of the field is on the course at a time, and you know, it's a pro-am, so, I don't know, pro-ams just suck, you know? I like going to the pro-ams, like on Wednesdays, those are my favorite part of an event, but when a pro-am is the entire week, yeah, I don't really like those events too much. The coverage sucks, play sucks, you know, which you have to wait until the fourth day of the event to kick the ams off your team. I mean, sure, some of them might have some synergy, but for the most part, you know, they might just, you know, shoot the shit a bit much, or maybe annoy certain people. I don't know. I don't really care too much about all of that, really just expressing my frustrations there. Just not a big fan of the pro-ams, not even Pebble Beach. You know, I just wish it wasn't a pro-am. But yeah, going back into what these courses really stick out with, let's start from the greens. These are the slowest greens on, well, they're tied with Trinity Forest, the new stadium, or the new course for the Byron Nelson tournament down in Texas, with an 11 stint meter rating. It's tied with Trinity Forest for the fourth slowest greens on the PGA Tour, and actually the slowest on mainland America, because most of the slowest I'm talking about are your Pospalum greens, you know. Well, Pospalum? Not really sure how to pronounce that. Never heard someone say it, only read it in text. But your Pospalum greens, I'm going to go with that, Pospalum. Your Pospalum greens, they can get down to the 9, the 10s on the stint meter. I mean, you know, about what you're used to playing at the municipal course. But these greens over here in California, you know, the Bermuda, seeded with rye, real nice and slow on the stimp. Slower greens help better putters. be better putters. But at the same time, if you look at the stadium course, the only one we have shot data from, only Conway Farms, the BMW Championship, only that event had less putts, and it was by 0.1 putt. So on average, they're under 26 putts per round. The greens are just really easy for everybody to hit. Obviously, they're just, it's easy to get on the greens, easy to hit the ball in the cup. It's easy to do everything here. It's literally the easiest event possible. So just to further corroborate that, if you look at La Quinta, for example, it is sort of insane how many things it's the second best at. Like, as the second lowest average score, the second lowest average showdown fantasy points. 44 fantasy points is the average. Significantly higher than other courses. And we'll get to why later. Well, here in a second. Like I had mentioned earlier, you know, driving distance, they're not bombing it like they do at the tournament course. But, you know, it's still just easy enough to where they're hitting their greens. They're hitting their fairways about the same clip. And the greens are hitting them pretty easily at a 70% rate. But La Quinta is second only to the Canadian Open course, Glen Abbey, in eagles per round. And we all know that the Canadian Open is an absolute eagle fest. You see people put up 3-4 eagles there with ease because their par fives are extremely easy. And you got a lot of that going on here. But it's really not the par fives that make this whole course, you know, what it is. It's the fact that there are a crap ton of short par fours, and I'll talk about it here in a second, but I had to do the fantasy scoring projections a little bit different this week. I couldn't just do one course and just do the, you know, projected course score based on, you know, their trends at different hole types. I had to just put in every single hole type they'll be facing and add it all the way up to 72. You just factor in it assumes everybody makes the cut, but, you know, still, it just gives us a nice balanced metric to work with that, you know, evenly balances all the courses they'll be facing, the amount of times they're supposed to face them. But yeah, you'll see they add up, you know, that number adds up to way higher than it usually does. And it's because looking at four rounds of data collectively instead of just one, could have averaged it down to one, but I didn't. You know, brand new RS up. So I might as well just leave that up for right now, and I'll get to it later. But yeah, you can see how many just scoring fantasy points they're expected to score here at that course, given the types of holes there are. And there are just a crap ton of par fours that are under 300 yards. That is the calling card at this place. If you look at all par fours, 450 yards and shorter, there are 34 of them that they'll be playing out of 72 holes. That's about half. So they'll spend about half their time on these short par fours. So you definitely want to look at guys who are hitting it in that regard. But of course, the projected course score kind of factors all that in evenly. So you really just got to look at that like every week. But if you do want to focus on certain hole types, definitely the short par fours. And the approach types are also interesting. With it being a short par 72, of course, it's going to be a wedge fest. And if you go and look at the tournament comparison sheet again, you'll see on there's a section called approach strokes. It has it broken down to all the different distances, but you won't see numbers on there. Like, you'll see percentages, and the percentages mean compared to a baseline tournament, you know, this tournament has X percent more approaches at this length than others. You know, it helps even out the, you know, instead of just looking at the raw numbers and stuff, helps even out the differences and pars and things like that. Just compared to expected, what percent more or less approach strokes at different distances each course has. And this one's pretty unique. Only three courses have more wedge shots taken, which are, you know, anything under 125 yards. The 50 to 125 yard mark is a really, really good one for that, and probably a stat we're going to want to reference here. But only Pebble Beach, Kapalua, again with the Kapalua, we'll see That'd be a constant trend here. comparing things to Kapalua, which might have mentioned has the slowest greens of all tournaments. It's just a weird tournament. But Pebble Beach, Kapalua, and Silverado are the only courses that take more wedge shots into the greens than the stadium course. And as for La Quinta and Nicholas, I'm pretty sure they're right there. They might even have more wedge shots taken, honestly. They might be up there with, like, Kapalua and Pebble. But, you know, we don't have any data for, so we can never know. But if you go into the next range right after that, 125 to 150 yards, only one course has less. And guess what course that is? Yep, the only course that has less approach shots from that range is Kapalua. And Kapalua and the stadium course kind of stick out as significant outliers. Like, they really don't have approach shots taken from 125 to 150 yards. So if you're using that stat in any way, you can definitely toss that one out. Look at the wedge numbers, and I'm gonna check them out a little bit later once I'm done with this full, you know, court the breakdown here. But we're gonna pull up the wedge numbers, and you'll see some names that are they're already on my radar here that really stick out in that regard. But you know, back to what I need to go back to what La Quinta is second best at. They're second best at a lot of things. Average showdown fantasy points, second only to the tournament course. Eagles per round. Oh, I already said that one. Second only to Glen Abbey. Birdies per round. Also, second only to the PGA National, the Honda Classic, which is the most birdies of any course. But has so many double bogeys that, you know, it's not actually an easy course. As where this course, guessed it, not only the second lowest bogeys behind only PGA National. Such a weird split there. PGA National literally being like number one in lowest amount of bogeys per round, but like way up there, almost like at the very top of most double bogeys. We'll get to that tournament in a few months here, but La Quinta, again, second lowest number of double bogeys as well, behind only Trinity Forest. And you know, that course only has 1 year worth of data to work with here. So yeah, it's just such a unique little setup of courses here. And there's going to be a split. Of course, you don't want to play the stadium course on Thursday. I feel like a lot of people know that. It's a pretty common strategy. Guys starting at the tournament course on Saturday usually don't do well. And if you look, we've got it on the research station here. We've got everyone's course rotation. If you look at all the top guys, they're pretty much all set up to start La Quinta and then go to the tournament course and then finish on the stadium course because they want the big names. They're on the weekend when more people are watching them. So you got Rahm, Rose, Mickelson, all these guys up at the very top there, just you know, just all starting La Quinta so that on Saturday they can have their preferred coverage of Phil at the stadium course where they got everything set up. So I mean, it makes sense, but you're gonna kind of want to target those guys. And if someone's starting at the stadium course like Hadwin, you know, it doesn't mean fade them completely, but it's just not optimal. It really ain't. You don't want to get off to a bad start and let everyone else just hop off on the leaderboard. Even if you just get off to a mediocre start, it's just so much better to just get up there and get in contention right away. If anything, it'll just make you feel better on a Thursday. But you know, looking at the tournament course again here, it's also got some numbers that it's pretty good at. Not quite as insane as La Quinta, but sixth in birdies per round, fourth and lowest bogeys per round, but it does cough up a lot more double bogeys per round compared to La Quinta. La Quinta is just the real easy one. Is where the tournament course just has it's just a big bomber's course, really, and a lot of opportunities for you to score. Just not as many eagle opportunities as La Quinta's, because La Quinta's eagles are kind of free unless you're out there shooting a 59. But yeah, so you know, I'm sure a lot of people will be focusing on avoiding the stadium course and all that. I mean, in showdown, it's pretty obvious. You don't play guys at the stadium course. You pick all the guys playing La Quinta and maybe some tournament course guys. But, you know, I don't know about showdown this week. I feel like everyone will be doing the same thing. There might be some AM, PM splits, some weather going on. We'll see as we get further into the evening tonight. But Yeah, for our overall approach, how to attack this tournament. Statistics is still at a low point, you know. If you look at, you've completely redone the recent form section, you can see, along with the names of all the tournaments, you can see the field size and the field strength. Came with an algorithm that does a pretty darn good job of displaying relative field strength and, you know, the numbers. They all make perfectly obvious sense. You know, the worst fields are Corrales Punta Canas, Byron Nelson, John Deere Classic, Sanderson Farms. I mean, it just makes a lot of sense. And then the hardest being the WGCs and the Tour Championships and stuff like that. It's, yeah. So, yeah, if you look back at the last few months, really since the PGA Tour playoffs started, we've only had two full field events, well, three full field events, and only one of them was truly full, the RSM Classic. The Safeway Open, the Sony Open, were almost at the size of a full field, 156 golfers, but they both came in at 100, in the 140s. So they're not really a full field, about 10 guys short there. This is a full-on 156-person field. The standard, you know, if you look back from the time where the St. Jude Classic starts, you've actually got seven events in a row leading up to the Canadian Open there. And 9 out of 10 events where it has the full 156 players. It's just such a weird, you know, it's so tumultuous. It goes from that large stretch of full-on, you know, big regular size tournaments, and then it just goes straight into no cut, you know, playoff land from there, you know, with weeks and weeks in between. So, you know, the statistics still, you know, we need to let it collect over the 2018 season or 2019 season. Gotta get into the next year here. And, you know, with the new RS setup, I'm positive that we'll be able to attack this stuff even harder than we did last year. And I thought last year was just one hell of an improvement over the research station from the year before, which I thought was pretty good in the first place. So we're never stagnating, always moving forward, always progressing. Over here at DFSArmy.com, promo code TACO, link in the description. Go support that pod. Check us out. You'll definitely want to, once I start explaining all the new things I've added, you'll definitely want to come check us out. Just keep that in mind. Let me just go over these real quick before I dive in the field. So basically the story is, the last year or so, had access to some, you know, the back-end PGA Tour stats site. Pretended to be a grad school and college to get in. And eventually they revoked my credentials because, I mean, they should have a while ago. So I'd kind of had a backup plan, you know, in mind. But I didn't expect for them to revoke my credentials, like, days before the start of the season. So this last week and a half, I've been absolutely crunching out of my mind and just had a brilliant light bulb moment. And all of a sudden, bam, everything came together for me. And it's been hard work, but I finally put together just an even better data set and model than before. And again, I thought, you know, I was just going to keep on rolling with that through this year because it was perfectly fine. It's doing great. Now it's like, I almost have, like, more I can do now. It's, you know, just going over and redoing the whole thing just helps streamline it even further. And I thought it was pretty streamlined to begin with. So, yeah, we're just keeping it rolling over here at DFS Army. And, all right, the proof's in the pudding here. So, let me talk about these new features here. There are some things that I just literally can't bring back. You know, every stat that I used, I tried to basically write an algorithm to create every stat that I had just gotten for free before. And most of them had worked. I probably could still get most of them to work, but I put out a questionnaire to the Army members and just try to focus on what they expressed were important to them. So I'm really trying to, you know, listen to user feedback and focus on maybe simplifying a little bit. I mean, it can be daunting, but I still want to leave just a plethora of overwhelming stats in there, just in separate tabs for the people that want to do a deep dive. And believe me, it gets plenty deep. The strokes gained tab made a comeback, and now it's got twice as many rounds on there. You can see each person's last 20 individual rounds and just track how they've been doing in each category. coming in. Pretty sweet there. Then we've got fantasy scoring on its own tab now. You mainly just want to look at the projected core score from this, but you know, if you want to look at individual hole or hole type splits, you can look at it on there. It's kind of, you know, making the research station a little wide. Last year, having that on the main page, so it just kind of made its own page. But you can see the projected core score and the rank and the fantasy points per hole. And it's on a little tiny abbreviated section. And it's really nice. And then we've got, I'm trying to put a lot more focus on the field rank statistics. And you can see from the field rank tracker, just added to the research station recently. It's just such a, it's a more effective way of looking at game logs, or game logging just smarter. Uh-oh. You know what that sound means? That means I need to go pick up my kid. So I'm going to have to pause the podcast and get back to you guys. I'll get back to you guys real quick. Let me go pick up my child. I'm going to go do that. But first I'll just get this thought out here that's already in my head. Don't want to forget about it before I come back. The field rank, basically, it's a score from 0% to 100%. You could convert it into a grade if you feel so obliged. You could look at like a Madden rating, or you could just look at it in the most simplistic way, which is if someone has a 100% field rank, that means they won the tournament. If they have a 0%, they finished dead last. If they're 50%, it means they finished right in the middle of the pack. And so on and so forth. And especially with the recent stretches we've been in, you know, you could... What's a good example here? So, Rom. Rom's been sucking lately, according to the field rank splits. Over the last 15 events, he's played 6 of them with a 57% field rank. And somehow he's the most expensive player on the board here. And even if you bring it back to the last 25 events he's played... And remember, you don't even need Shot Link for this. It's literally just straight up based on position, but just adjusting it properly. Over the last 25 events, he's played 10, 58% adjusted field rank. So significant little sample size right there. But if you look at it from a numbers standpoint, you know, you look at his recent performances, 8th, 22nd, 11th, 24th, 43rd. Hey, that's not bad. You know, that's not terrible. And especially now when DraftKings does what I love them doing in erasing the game logs, so everyone just forgets about last season already. Whereas, of course, if you have DFS Army Premium membership, you can reference the entire season in a clean, neat, and very carefully calculated little way that not only shows it shows exactly where everyone finished, doesn't even have the basic MCs miscuts in there. Had to write an algorithm for that, and that was fun. But the field rank statistic, it just takes it a step further and puts everything into perspective. And with a field rank tracker, you can also reference some stats about the tournament from the above section, the strength of the field, how many people they're competing against, the name of the tournament, and all that. Going to add some more things into that as well. Think about just putting up some stuff like, you know, the driving distance, greens of regulation, the scores, you know, all the par, all that good stuff, just a reference. And you can look at it, and it gives you such a clear view of people's form and people's medium-term form. Everyone looks at short-term, especially now. Everyone's looking at just what they've done in the swing season. And if someone's been doing well in the swing season, you want to take a step further and look at it. You know, what I would usually do is just go on Google and look up their official world golf rankings and just go on that site, and you can see pretty much every tournament they've played at. But you have to kind of guess, you know, how many people are in the field and stuff like that. But you know, you just look at the field or the field rank tracker. And let me just start this off with a crazy Justin Rose stat here. You can see that in 11 of his last 12 events, he's finished in the top 15% of the field. Not joking. And all that was just because of the horrible miscut he had at the Northern Trust. But it was really the only The only bad part of an otherwise pretty perfect season from Rose. If you take out that awful finish at the Northern Trust that also took out some other big hitters like Rahm, especially. He was even worse than Rose at the Northern Trust. But anyway, if you were to exclude that one finish and just look at his adjusted field rank, I shit you not, these are his numbers. Rose is a beast. 97%, 90%, 99%, 99%, 88%, 99%, 94%, 96%, 100%, 85%, 87%. Dude is a monster. He has, and yeah, I have it broken down in several different ways. You can look at it by last 10, last 15, last whatever weeks, or you can look at what percentage of the time they hit certain percentage marks. Last season, or at least last year to date, Rose hit top 15 in 82% of his events played. And if you look at the field average, in that stat, it's nutty. Like, oh my God, you hear my stomach yelling. All right, I'm gonna feed you. I just want to make a point to my podcast people here real quick. If you look at the field average for top 25% rate, which, you know, overall, if you look at everybody, that's going to average out to 25%. And it's pretty similar in this field. It's 26%, just 1% off there. Rose hits that mark at an 82% clip. Dude is ungodly. But, yeah, I'm going to go grab my kid. I'll be right back to finish the rest of this podcast once I get her settled down. And I'll try to hurry this out to you fine folks there, the DFS Army, and anyone listening in. So be right back. And I'm back. Did you miss me? All 2 seconds I was gone? So, where was I? I have no idea. I think the last thing I was talking about is the field ranking tracker. Explained that pretty well. Just, I mean, you gotta really see it to understand, but it just helps you visualize recent, medium-term, and long-term form. Just very basically, very, very simple to understand. But I need to talk about the big tool I just released today, brand new tool, and it's going to be extremely helpful, I think, just super helpful, and will eventually become one of the primary focuses of just one of the most powerful tools I've come up with, just super handy. It's what it is. It's called the head-to-head player comparison tool, and it allows you to just select any of the golfers from the field, any two of them, and bam, it'll instantly match them up in every single stat. You can see them side by side, and you can see their last 20 or 30 events or so in their recent form. And yeah, it'll just really help you guys make decisions between two golfers, you know? When's the last time you've been stuck between two golfers? Oh, all the time. And probably add support for a third golfer to analyze as well, but for now it's working pretty well. So basically, you just select your site, DraftKings or FanDuel, and that'll vary some of the stats like fantasy point scoring and all that. If we compare John Rahm to Justin Rose straight up, the two highest priced golfers on the board, I can see that Rahm not looking so good, even though he's more expensive than Rose. Rose wins in 27 out of 33 statistical categories over Rahm. Of course, one of those being salary. So Rahm got a freebie there. So it's really like 27 to 5. Granted, a couple of them don't really matter. Some I'm going to kind of work on in the future. Like, total number of rounds played. I mean, it's nice to have a bigger sample. But eventually I'm probably going to turn those into customizable weights just for some quick analysis. You can kind of weight what stat you think matters more. And then, I'll just give the points to whoever's better in each category. It's not going to be like a super powerful tool or anything. Probably use the stat cruncher more for those kind of in-depth statistical inquiries. But this is just really nice for some quick analysis between two golfers. Just plug in what you think is important and just set her up. Right now, it just gives you an overall view of who's better at what, sort of like a in-game graphic, like the halftime of a basketball game or something, where they like in 2K, where they show, you know, all the stats and who's leading and what. That's pretty much how it's set up right now. But you can see Everything the research station on the main page has to offer available in this head-to-head stat comparison. Even if you just want to look at one golfer and just have more room to look at without everyone being in a row, that's really helpful as far as that goes too. And you can easily compare stats to the field average as well. So you're not just comparing one player to another. You're comparing one player to the field average and also comparing to another player. Or you could just look at, you know, each player versus the field average, or you could just look at two golfers. It's up to you. And yeah, you can see the course history up against each other. Of course, Rose never played here before, so maybe we'll pick someone that's actually played here a few times. Charles Howell. And it just instantly fills out, and you can it's pretty much just amazing for making decisions stuck on one guy instead of asking me, waking me up. Take a gander at this for yourself and just see what kind of pops out for you. I plugged in Charles Howell over Rose, and Rahm and Howell actually split in the statistic. You know, of course, Howell's gonna be better at stuff like made cut percentage, and you know, Rahm's gonna be better in things like driving distance or whatever. But this is just the groundwork for what's gonna be a super powerful tool. It's very easy to use, pretty easy to understand. It's very quick, nice, and efficient. We like that stuff around here. Without further ado, we're only 35 minutes into this podcast. Let's talk about the field, finally. Like I had said, Rahm and Rose up at the top. They're flip-flopped on FanDuel like they should be in the first place. Rahm is actually the betting favorite over Rose right now. And he's drifting a little bit, so he is currently sitting at 5-1 with Rose at 8-1. It doesn't really make much sense to me. Rose is the number one golfer in the world, and his record over the last year kind of speaks for itself. I had already alluded to earlier just how insane he is statistically and how misleading Rahm's stats are. The thing Rahm has going for him here is he's played this course recently, unlike Rose, and well, these courses, I must say. And he also won last year. It's a very helpful thing to have done. I still prefer Rose over Rahm in pretty much every way. I'm not huge on using Rahm. I was back when he was like what Neiman is now. You know, a couple of years ago is the... Or I guess I should say what Cameron Champ is. It's more of an accurate... more of an accurate simile there. Just... they had about the same sort of meteoric rise based on, you know, things like scoring and distance and all that. So, just up top, Rose for cash over Rahm, Rose for GPP over Rahm. He's probably going to be the chalk. We have him as the highest owned player right now as it stands. Around 24-25%, and Rahm's right around the 20% mark. Might not even break that. I just think people are going to go to Rose over Rahm. It just seems smart. We know that backing up tournaments and winning them back-to-back is easy. We saw several guys do that 2 years ago. It's a three-peating that's hard. Right now, Tommy Fleetwood's trying to three-peat in what's actually my second favorite tournament in all of golf. The only tournament longer, or the only course longer than my favorite tournament, which is coming up in just a few weeks here, the Farmers Open. We're excited about that, but... yeah, hopefully Fleetwood can three-peat that, but it doesn't look like it. It seems like Lowry's kind of off to a really good, really awesome start here, but I digress a lot. Gotta get back into this field. Never seen Charles Howell III priced so appropriately before. Like last year, DraftKings was so bad about pricing him during this time of the season. With his win at the RSM Classic and his eighth place last week at Sony, I think that Howell's going to be more popular than ever before, despite a five-figure price tag, which is insane. Last year, he was around $7,000. For a good while, he was just perpetually underpriced by DraftKings. Now it's like, oh, wait, he can win. Oops. And yeah, now we have to deal with a Howell that's not a free space. That is a very expensive space. But the thing about Howell is that whenever there's a tournament that he has great course history at, he just keeps it going every single time. And he is so much better during the West Coast swing than any other part of the PGA Tour golf season. It's like Brandon Steele, except for he's in excruciatingly good form. Like, better form than he's been in quite a long time. And it doesn't look like he's slowing down anytime soon. He's actually putting up way more top 20s, top 25s than usual, and three top 10s in his last six tournaments he's played. I mean, there were some bad ones thrown in there. He missed the cut at the Mayakoba Classic and was almost damn near the bottom of the field, the CJ Cup, but it's hard to doubt Howell at a course that he's actually good at. Whenever there's a course he sucks at, he usually continues to suck there. He's not a complete slave for course history or anything, but it just, like, as far as cut making goes, he is like the number one example of somebody who really likes to just have a good course history at a place and just keep that going. It's like KJ Choi at the Genesis Open, but for like 15 tournaments on tour. It's insane, that guy. And then someone with better course history than him, at least over the last 3 years, three straight top sixes. Mr. Adam Hadwin, Mr. 59 guy. The other 59 guy, of course, I think David Duval actually got a 59. Maybe not the same course, but that could have been La Quinta. La Quinta's been the rotation for a while, but let me just type that in real quick. Shoot, might as well look it up. It was at the PJ West TPC Stadium course. So, that's even more impressive. Good job, David, there. But yeah, back into Hadwin here. $10,000 for Hadwin. Pretty much most of the guys up here in this weaker field outside of Rose and Rahm. It's kind of head scratchers as to why they're really there. But, oh my God, I skipped over Patrick Cantlay. Jesus Christ. I'm being so catatonic all of a sudden. Jeez. Cantlay, this is like the new Charles Howell as far as cut making goes. I mean, this dude's missed like two cuts ever, and one of them was at the Masters. It doesn't mean he refrains from being awful at some no-cut events. He does do that from time to time, but recently he's been rock solid. Had a pretty bad playoffs overall, I'd say, but look past that. Second at the Shriners, seventh at the WGC HSMB Championships in China. 17th at Safeway, even 8th at the Northern Trust there. 6th at the other WGC event. He's just so good at these WGCs, man. Well, not the Mexico one, but all the other ones, apparently. They're just rock steady and consistent, but you know, we're used to rostering him at, what, 8K, maybe? It's 10-6. 11-3 on FanDuel. I mean, even FanDuel is pricing him appropriately now. That's how you know the cat's out of the bag with Patrick Cantlay, because he was a free play on there literally all of last season. The entire 2018 season, there's not a slate where you wouldn't play Cantlay, because they just did not know how to price people. Is he worth paying for? I don't know. I see him as the lowest owned out of these guys, just because Howell's going to have some crazy hype. Hadwin will be the lowest owned, I think. I think he's really overpriced, and people are not going to want to pay for him, and he's starting on the stadium course. But Cantlay, I'm in the teens right now as far as ownership goes, just because of that price tag. And he's third favorite in the betting books, the sports books here. He's sitting at 17-1, but compare that to Rose's 9-1, Rahm 6-1. Just with being somewhat similar in price within 1,000 of those guys. As far as odds value goes, it's not really on Cantlay, but I mean, nothing wrong with using him at all. It just sucks he's so expensive. Same with Howell. I wish I could play the crap out of Rose, Cantlay, Howell, but I can't. They're just too expensive, and I have to find other plays. Speaking of other plays, Andrew Hadwin starts off a 9K range. 17th here last year, and runner-up last week at the Sony Open. If you look at how he did it, it's pretty immaculate, actually. Go bust out our old boy, Andrew Putnam here. He was, he took his name literally that first round. He was putting him in at a clip of 7 strokes gained putting in the first round. He just took the Michael Kim approach of leading a tournament, and he almost won it for him. I mean, yeah, Kim did win by 8 strokes just on good putting alone. I know I don't like to target good putting, really target the bad putters, because it's so much easier for that to flip than your approach game and especially your driver. But Putnam, Andrew Putnam, a guy we were just rostering at $6,000 for $9,700. Man, no, he's not even good. Not even good Vegas value. He's not the worst value of the week. That would definitely be Daniel Berger on FanDuel, because God knows why he's like top five in pricing. He's like 70-1 right now and coming off a wrist injury. But hey, yeah, their algorithm's weird. They haven't had as many years to perfect it as DraftKings has. Even then, they still mess up a lot of the times. But yeah, Putnam, not going to be playing him. Personally, my strategy here, not going to be using Hadwin much either. I'm just going to try to get Rose Cantlay and Howell in however I can. Pretty much ignore Rahm. He's probably going to screw me over again in the end. That's just a risk I'm willing to take. I kind of fade Rahm all the time now, especially when I think he's going to be somewhat buzzed. Another play that I've really been just thinking about here, $9,500. Not a good odds value by any means. So we will not be chalky, especially in the higher dollar entry tournaments. And he hasn't played since his match with Tiger Woods. And now you know exactly what I'm talking about. It's the guy that finished in the exact opposite spot of Tiger Woods in the Tour Championship, last. But if you take that and you take the BMW Championship out of the equation, it's just like Cantlay. Dude had a rock solid season. Did screw up majorly at the Players. So he had like three massive failures. Well, four. I forgot about the PGA Championship, but he had four strong fields. Four of the strongest fields possible where he just blew up and just continued to just not care at all and just sink all the way to the bottom. Just said F it. And yeah, but other than that, what a great season for Mickelson, really. Made cut percentage, 88%. Had that stretch starting around this time last year where he had the string of 5th at the Waste Management, 2nd at Pebble Beach, 6th at the Genesis Open, and then 1 at the WGC Mexico event, and then just kept it rolling from there. 5th at Wells Fargo. Met him there at the Wells Fargo. Dude, that dude is just an awesome guy. Incredible guy. He stood there for like an hour just taking everyone's autographs, focuses on the kids. He's a great guy. I do not have the patience to do that sort of stuff. Now, I don't think Mickelson's going to be too popular, even though he's Phil Mickelson, because the public isn't really playing this tournament as much as the hardcore degens of the PGA golf industry. And they're going to be focusing on Aaron Wise, who's kind of a hot ticket item right now. I don't like Wise at all, personally. He's a great line value, and he's even drifting. He's at 25-1 right now. Compare that to Mickelson's 37-1. That's pretty rough. Now, both these guys have some good history coming in. Mickelson was third here in 2016, 21st in 2017. Did miss the cut last year, but generally makes the cut. Wise has made 2 of 2 cuts here. And, you know, the easy fairways, I do like that for Wise a lot, because he likes to just let it rip. He also likes to either just come and like, it's so weird. Over his last, you can go back a ways here. Go all the way back to the Masters. You can go all the way back to the Masters, and he has yet to put up a finish. You can throw out the Tournament of Champions, because that would be a miscut if there was a miscut to be had. He finished 27th out of 30 golfers there. But he's yet to have a finish where he has made the cut but not finished like top 16. That's the exact stat right there. So he's got, I mean, he does have some like, okay, 69th at the Dell Technologies Championship, again, 96-person field there. But, you know, just looking at it, 10th, 15th, 15th, 16th, and 69th. 5th, 116th. 90th, 79th. 90th, 86th, 80. Oh, man. And that was right after he had just won at the Byron Nelson. Just did the old Hudson Swafford and just started losing like crazy after streaking into a victory. And at the Players, at the Wells Fargo, I met Wise there at the Wells Fargo when I was there. I talked to him for a little bit. Great kid. He ended up coming second, super confident. And it's crazy how he's just so ridiculously up and down. He is the ultimate GPP play. But I'm not really going to be targeting him because this is a chalk week for him, I do believe. Even though he had a horrible performance at the Tournament of Champions, A 27 still kind of looks good on the game logs if you don't know what to look for. And the 10th and 15th right behind that in the swing season, also looking pretty good for Wise. He could do well, and he's probably trending for a reason. I'm just not going to play him. I'm going to play Abraham Answer, $9,300 right underneath him. This is a play I've had circled pretty much since I set my eyes on the card. And it's sort of an innate feeling, but at this point, I think he's going to be a great ownership play. I think a lot of people are going to focus on Reavy right underneath him, and we'll get to him. And then Wise, of course. So he's sandwiched in between some really popular guys. And a few of the guys that I'm really targeting in this slate in particular, I'm using that exact strategy. Looking for some guys that have been touted, are going to get some ownership, and trying to pick some guys that I like in between them. Not just random names for the sake of having a low-owned guy, because I can just scroll down here and go, Cooper Musselman, bam, 0% owned. And I lose all my money, unless he pulls a Ted Potter Jr. somehow. Which is not likely, but, you know, you've got some great contrarian picks to pick from here in this lower 9K range. I'm going with Abraham Answer. He's looking pretty darn good. Has four top 10s since the Canadian Open, where he finished 5th. And he's made 4 of his 5 cuts in the swing season. Well, actually, he's made them all, but he finished, like, dead last almost at the CJ Cup. So I'm going to count that as a miscut. It's a, actually, if we go by our field ranking, the field ranking tracker, look up this, gotta sort it up real quick, gotta sort it. So go to Abraham Answer, and at the CJ Cup, 5% field rank. Throw it out the window, though, and his most recent results would be 80%, 85%, 98%. 5%, 95%, 25%, 94%, 32%, then 85%, 97%. He's kind of like Answer in this regard. When he makes the cut, the dude is finishing in the top 10, top 15% of fields, which is where you start getting the finishing boning points or bonus points. And at this tournament, you better have put up birdies on your way there. Something I kind of forgot to stress earlier. I think the main stat we're looking for, the main specific stat that we're going for, it's got to be birdies gained or fantasy points gained. Either way, it's just going to be so crucial here. You're going to need to get up to like almost minus 30 to win this thing. You're going to have to throw down birdies, and it's not going to be a war of attrition by any means. The courses just don't give up bogeys. I mean, they're some of the worst courses at giving up bogeys, some of the best at giving up birdies and eagles, and it kind of shows you're going to want to find the guys who birdie an eagle. And if I can go back to Mickelson here real quick, I don't know why I didn't finish my thoughts on him, but Mickelson rates out number 1 in our projected course score. And if you want to look at why, it's pretty simple. You open up the fantasy scoring tab and look at Phil Mickelson here. Now, the key range here, there are 20 holes that are between 400 and 450 yards, and that they'll be facing, or they'll be going up against. And the main stat, though, the one I think is more jilted than it usually is, has to be the short par fours. There are 14 of them. Usually, you might get like one or two at a course. Especially like La Quinta, it's just loaded with these short par fours. And Mickelson's good at both these stats. And it's not even really any one split that makes him stick out. I mean, because like Rose is better than him at the medium length par fours. And Neiman's better than Mickelson at the short par fours. It's really just him having no weak spots. If you look at, you know, the coloring, most people have like one or two spots where they're not great from. Like Howell's pretty bad at longer par fours, which luckily for him, don't really have to face here. But my bad. I was looking at the wrong person. It's the long par threes he struggles at, along with the long par fives, which again, there aren't too many of those hole types here. But he's not quite the fantasy scorer that Mickelson is. Mickelson is like the ultimate like showdown play. I play him so much in showdown, along with Billy Horschel first round, because those things are just money in the bank. He just birdies so much more than everyone else. He's number 1 in this field in birdies gained per round. It was per event, actually. Averages. No, it's actually Justin Rose, which makes sense. And George Cunningham, who's a low sample size guy, only eight rounds, but they've been eight amazing rounds. We'll see. We'll see about this Cunningham guy. But Phil Mickelson, the 88% made cut percentage, just a huge step up in that regard. So he's kind of safe. And then third in birdies gained. And I think he's top five in fantasy points gained. Yeah. And if you take out some of the scrubs, he's like top 10. A lot of guys close in this range here. But yeah, pretty much. I just really like Phil. I'm not a Phil guy, you know? I mean, I usually don't play a lot of him. I've been playing him a little bit more, but he's still just like, I try to focus him more on Showdown and stuff. But I think I just really like him overall this week, and I don't think that people are going to be playing him too much. He's right next to Wise and then Reavy. So Mickelson, Answer, those are kind of my targets here in this lower, upper expensive range, 9K range here. And then we have to talk about Chaz Reavy real quick. Gonna try to cruise down this field so we're not, you know, breaking an hour with this podcast or anything. But Chaz Reavy, he's kind of like followed the same path as Woodland last year. He came in just smoking hot, made every cut, and he was doing that at the end of the 2017 season as well. And it looks like he was just going to be the next Paul Casey. And he's often shown flashes of that. But he only made 55% of his cuts last year. And here's why. It's he just had a super, super rough stretch during the major season, from like the Masters to the PGA Championship. The dude was terrible. Had a sixth place finish at the St. Jude Classic. Other than that, it was all miscuts. It was so bad. But he started the year off in the West Coast Swing with a second at Waste Management, a second at Pebble Beach. And it's immediately after that they just fell off a cliff. Seems to figure it out as of recently. 7th at the CJ Cup, 26th at the Mayakoba Classic. And last week he was 3rd at the Sony Open. I don't know if it's enough for me to really get in on him. I know the last 3 years he's made the cut and finished top 20 in two of those years here at this course, but $9,200. I know his game logs look good, so he's a play I'm going to kind of step back a little bit from. Same with the Putnam call, really. Just me avoiding some nice-looking game logs. And I'm going to... I think that if you're attacking a mini-max or something, you know, $5 that has 100-plus entries, you're not going to care about game logging because most of the people you're playing against have been optimized. In those tournaments, you want to play against the Vegas odds guys because those are guys get overowned, especially as you go higher up in entry fee. But when you're in like a 3-max, even the 20-max that people are filling out by hand, yeah, I think that Reavy is going to get a bit overowned. That I also think he's kind of projecting pretty well. He's a reasonably good Vegas odd in his own degree, just not quite as good as Wise here. So moving along, Scott Piercy at $9,100. He's had some slick finishes recently, but I just don't trust him at all. If you go back past his swing season, it's literally just been his swing season that's good. His regular season was trash. Just really bad. So I'm not really interested in guys like that, Reavy or Piercy, who have looked good recently, but it's deceptive, you know? I mean, sure, Answer, you could probably throw him in that category, but at least during the stretch where he was quote-unquote bad, he was making cuts. Made 73% of his cuts on the year. It's pretty good. But yeah, finishing off the 9K range here with, or on DraftKings at least, with Luke List. Very expensive over on FanDuel, over $10,000 there. Has some fourth place finishes recently at the RSM Classic and the Safeway Open. And List is kind of another, just there's so many of these streaky players that I just got to talk about. And List is just another one. He's another one to add to the list. Last year, he started off the season just smoking hot. He had, from the Farmers Open till the RBC Heritage, he had, what was that, eight straight top 26 finishes. I then threw in a ninth at the Wells Fargo as well. And then after that, it was just, not really just miscut after miscut, just a lot of like MDFs, T56s, T48s, doing no better than a T24 until that fourth I just mentioned at the Safeway Open. So, just seems like this is, maybe it's a cyclical thing, you know? I know that Howell and Steele be doing this a lot, just snoozing during the major season, so not really competing too much, and then just turning it on during the early part of the season where the tournaments are easier, and you don't have a lot of the superstars in the field. That's kind of their game, so if you want to play a list based off of that merit, sure. He's pretty good statistically. Just really bombs it out there with a good greens regulation percentage. He was sixth here in 2016. I think I'm just player hating, honestly. Really player hating Kevin Kisner at $8,900. He was seventh at the RSM Classic. I know he kind of popped up there. Runner-up at the Open Championship. Outside of a few random pop-up top tens, his season was just even worse than anyone else I've talked about so far, outside of maybe, I don't know, Reavy's season got pretty bad there for a minute. Wise, obviously, with all his miscuts. But that's sort of by design with Wise. He's like the Torrey Smith of golfers, or the Mike Wallace of golfers, is where Kisner, he was like super consistent for a while, and then he became Mr. Second Place. And he's up and down all over the place, and now he's come second in a major. After breaking through with wins and stuff, now it's just, who even knows with Kisner? I don't know why he's priced up so high. I'm just going to ignore that he's even on the card. Brian Harman at $8,800. Sneaking in the 8K range here. He's got the most odds drifts of anybody in this entire field. Let me double check. Yeah, anybody. He's up 14%. Started at 62-1. Now he's at 54-1. And his course history is looking almost as good as Hadwin's here in the last 3 years. 20th last year, and then a third, and an 11th place finish. And if you go farther back than that, it's like missed cuts and awful stuff. But that Adam Hadwin was a scrub. It's like the Adam Hadwin we know now kind of developed over the last 2 or 3 years. He's become a solid golfer, but he is one of those guys like a Kisner that back in the day he was just a scrub, and he was a scrub for years before figuring it out. Now, he's been playing like a scrub recently, I'll tell you that. He made the cut at the RSM Classic, which is fine and dandy, but if you go back to the regular season, every other event he played in the swing season, including last week to start off the season, it was just god-awful. This time last year, Harman was smoking hot, just posting constant top 10 after top 10 after top 10. And, he came grinding to a screeching halt. Still had some random top 10s every now and again. Pops up at things like, the U.S. Open or even he made the cut at the Masters and stuff. But, I might take a few shots at him. This is a course where, he's had one of those pop-up sort of results. But he could, but I don't know. I'm not really... I see the odds movement maybe as a sign of him being a little bit more popular this week. I don't imagine being too popular, but still, it doesn't take me much to get off of Harman. If anything, I'll just get off him because, like Hadwin, he's starting on the stadium course. And then Patton Kizzire. It's like a theme. I swear this podcast is just a theme. Guys who were great early in the season last year, who just were terrible during all the regular season, past the swing season, who are now rounding back into the form for the West Coast swing. But I don't know if I buy it with Kizzire, because up to this point, no one had been as bad as Kizzire this last year. He made 42% of his cuts, and at a 44% field rate. So the dude is priced at $8,700, and he literally lost to more golfers they teed up against than he beat, which is insane for a guy that won twice. I mean, those are 100% he threw up and still got worked down just by him being freaking terrible, Really, the whole, from Arnold Palmer and beyond, just atrocious. He had one 30th place finish. Other than that, it was all miscuts. Dude was fucking horrible. Then he gets the 23rd place finish at the CJ Cup. Okay. He's priced like minimum price for the Tournament of Champions. Ends up being the play you need. Comes 8th there. 13th last week. 15th at the RSM Classic. Oh my god, is Kizzire back? Is he going to start winning tournaments back to back again? He's 40-1. I'm not interested. I'm interested in Lucas Glover. I make fun of him a lot. I'm not even going to mention anything about his wife. There was just a certain event that may or may not have happened around the exact time that you know, his wife made the news for beating him. But up to that point in the season, you know, Glover had been a guy that was like the worst golfer on the PGA Tour back in like 2014, 2015, like the worst putter the PGA Tour has ever seen. Figured out his putter, and he's so good at tee to green that, I mean, this is a major winner here, a legit major winner. He could be back in a sense. I mean, he was really good last season, consistently making cuts, even early in last season. Even when he had fizzled out at the end, he was just having like T68s and T52s. And he had that long extended break. Popped up in the web.com tour at their championship and actually finished runner up there, almost won the web.com tour. Right after missing a cut at the DAP championship there for whatever reason, but it was one of his first stops back. He had pretty much left the PGA Tour after the US Open. Hopped on the web.com tour and used his second place finish at the web.com tour to parlay that into quite the outstanding swing season. Like, just insane. No finish worse than 17th, and just super consistent round after round, just hitting it beautifully, just doing what he does. 92% adjusted field rank. Even if you go back to the last 25 events, 80%. Made 75% of his cuts last year despite being crappy. I mean, all the stats are still there. Gains 23 fantasy points to the field. That is third best in the entire, or that's second best in this entire field. Could be jilted a little by the recent work he's been doing, but man, that's been some work. He might get a little popular here, but I don't really care too much. Starting on La Quinta, I think he's just going to keep rolling with it, honestly. I just really believe in his game. He's the ultimate example of target a bad putter, wait for him to become okay. And yeah, that really worked out for Glover. And I think he could parlay this into something good. I just don't have that feeling about Kazire. I don't know why. It's just just some intuition here. You know, hurry up and get through the rest of this real quick. JJ Spahn, I'm interested there. He's kind of expensive. Cheng Soon Pan. He's $8,400. I love me some Pan. That's my guy. He makes hella cuts. Not exactly the course one for him. Missed the cut here pretty badly twice in his only two attempts here. So I'm not as bullish on Pan as I usually am. I'll still have some because Pan's the man. He's my countryman. Then Hudson Swafford, making a lot of waves this week. $8,300. Won here back in 2017. Before falling off a cliff, and boy, that cliff extended all the way into like this season, because he started off the year he had no finish better than T59 all the way up until the John Deere Classic, where he just struggled into a 50th place finish. The dude has been horrible, just bad, and because of a third place finish last week and the fact they had won here before, that it's going to make him one of the chalkiest guys on the board. I don't really get it. Even the finishes before that were not great by any means. Let me read off the field ranks for you just real quick on Mr. Swafford. 99% last week. That's great. But then going back, 50%, 58%, 79%, 81%. It's all right. Just floating above average. That's cool. But go back any further and it's just awful. 52%, 57%. Did have the 93% the Canadian Open. And, he's a power bomber at like the ultimate power bomber score. So there's that. But then 68%, 17%, 63%, 32%, 42%, 52%, 38%, 45%, 55%, 23%. Those are just miscut after miscut after miscut, or MDF after MDF. Throw them on the pile of guys that were good and they were bad and now they're good again. So who knows? Now, we're hitting the lower 8K range here. So many guys I need to at least say something about here. Sungjae Im is going to be popular. I don't think he's broken double-digit ownership yet, but I think that trend gets bucked this week. 16th last week at the Sony Open, and 4th back at the Safeway Open, 15th at the Shriners. You know, the dude's had a pretty solid swing season. Had a few chokes, like at Sanderson Farms and the Mayakoba Classic, but still 71% greens or adjusting greens regulation percentage. His three events he's played on the West Coast. Those are the three really good finishes I mentioned, and he has a 92% field rank in the West Coast events. Start off his young career. That, and also he rates out pretty well a lot of the statistical numbers that we're looking for. He only has 24 rounds of shot link data to work with, but the sample size is starting to actually get there. He's not like one of the guys like Svensken or whatever who barely have anything yet to go off of. So I'm going to have interest in him. Not super hype train on him like a lot of people. And the guy, $100 cheaper than a Bo Hostler, I think he's starting to get a little love too. I know we most recently saw him miss the cut at the Mayakoba Classic, but your dude Bo, he can make a cut. He made 77% of his cuts last year. That's what he does. And mostly does it through putting. But he's like one of those putters that's just so good at putting that you just kind of let him putt and you're okay with it, like a Jason Day or a Phil. You can let everything else be kind of crappy, but his putting is just like solid and consistent. It's a part of who he is. He's like honestly one of the best, if not the best putter on the PGA Tour. I'm pretty sure he led in stroke gain putting last year. I'm gonna have to double check that, but I mean, if you just go right here, the last 50 rounds putting, Justin Rose actually rates out number one in that category. But you're gonna find yourself some Bo Hostler in there. So I don't know. I just like the guy. Again, just another one of those guys I met. Was it the Bridgestone? I think that was also at the Wells Fargo. Gotta go to more tournaments next year. So I have more to talk about. But Hostler is one of those guys that just seemed really excited to have someone talk to him finally. Just before he kind of blew up. Now I bet he's getting a little popular. Had some runner-up finishes and stuff. And I think he becomes a really good player once he figures out more than just his putter. Has a pretty good driver, I think, as it is. But spend too long on one guy here. Got to push through because, seriously, I can't let it go too long. Zach Johnson, $7,700, coming off of two missed cuts. They're close together, not right next to each other. Missed the cut at just last week at the Sony Open. Not a great showing from him, but just missed it by a stroke. It wasn't too bad. 110th at the Mayakoba Classic, however, that was pretty bad. But in between that, we had the 7th place finish at the RSM Classic. To remind you that, I mean, Zach Johnson, he does what he does. He has, he had a streak of like 6 straight top 20s, just 7 events removed from him. And did a little bit of just a general guide to show how rock steady he is, or how rock steady he's been over the last however many year. I think it's back till 2008. Like, he is yet to have a season where he misses more than 5 cuts since 2008, where he missed 6 cuts. And in that span, he's played at least 23 tournaments, usually 25 or more every single year. It's just crazy consistent. And let me read exactly what I wrote about him before. Here it is. So last year, ZJ missed. Or the last year ZJ missed more than 5 cuts was 2008. And he's played at least 23 events every single one of those years. In the last decade, he's made 198 out of his 229 cuts. That's an 86.4% made cut percentage. Oh, and in that span, he's only missed back-to-back cuts once. In that entire, was now almost 11-year span. It's the whole decade, only one back-to-back missed cut. He's just so solid and consistent. Obviously, he bounces back here. I mean, he just, like I said, he doesn't miss cuts back to back. He doesn't do that shit. He doesn't even miss cuts generally. So if he does end up missing the cut or just doing poorly, I will have some concern for him. But not even like just him playing bad, because he's Zach Johnson. He doesn't play bad. Like, something has to be like wrong with him. He's not old enough to the point where he's like fizzling out or whatever. He's Mr. Rock Steady. So. In cash games, he's a target. Even in GPPs, honestly. I'm not sure about ownership with him because he's coming off some recent missed cuts, but he's also got good line value, so that'll be an interesting one to check out. right in his range, you got Daniel Berger, appropriately priced on DraftKings, not on FanDuel. Zach Johnson's also very overpriced on FanDuel, along with Bo Hossler there. Berger's come off the wrist injury, hasn't played since the Dell Technologies Championship, so no thank you, especially on FanDuel. No thank you. You got Peter Uihlein around the same price, around the same Vegas odds as well, be starting on Stadium Course, 17th here last year. And I was in really bad form until his last two events, where he finished 7th at the RSM, 23rd at the Shriners. Statistically, nothing to write home about. Pretty bad at his driving accuracy, which won't hurt him too much here. But everyone just cares about the play right after him. Joachim Niemann, $7,600. Back to mispriced Niemann. For some reason, the odds books aren't huge on him. Actually, he just finally started to drift today. He was like sitting at 60, like in the 60s, just forever, not doing anything. Four of his last five finishes have not been anything to write home about, but he did the 10th at the Shriners, fifth back of the Greenbrier Classic. You know, had a lot of top 10s on the middle part of last year. Probably his breakout. He's only like 20 years old. The dude is going to be a beast. I don't think you have to play him every week, especially a week like this where he's going to be crazy chalky on DraftKings, but he's overpriced on FanDuel, and I might play him over there. Shoot, I might play Zach Johnson over there, because it's so easy to find salary on FanDuel. You got some mispriced guys like Harris English. You can try the George Cunningham guy over there for literally minimum price. Rory Sabatini's way too cheap. You know, just stuff like that. It's so easy to find value on FanDuel, and you've got more money to spend over there. So if there's someone that's going to be chalk on DraftKings, they're so cheap and too expensive to use on FanDuel, I always at least consider them. And that's someone I'm thinking about pulling the trigger on for real. Gonna run through the 7K range here, just kind of rapid fire here. Corey Connors is going to be popular at 7.5, 50th last year, and he had a third last week at the Sony Open, runner up back in the Sanderson Farms. Take out those two finishes, and there's nothing really to write home about. Statistically, he is kind of exactly what we're looking for. He's got really steady and consistent off the tee and approach game. He had always just brought it back with really awful putting, but over the last ten rounds he's played, he's actually gained a minuscule amount of strokes. So I'll have some Corey Connors for sure. I understand the play, and he's a little bit underpriced here, but he's the same price as Brandon Steele. Well, he's $100 cheaper, but still, like, you know, I know Steele's been awful lately, but it's just hard to, you know, like, you could just go to Niemann for $100 more. Siwoo Kim's someone that's getting a lot of love here. Drifted from 56 to 49 to 1 right now, and still moving, I'm sure. Ninth year when he played back in 2013, he finished 22nd. Missed the cut last week by a stroke, but had been, you know, finding some made cuts and stuff, and can always strike out of nowhere for a win or top five or whatever. I usually don't play Siwoo, but a lot of that was due to injury. Now he's fine, outside of maybe going back to freaking South Korea for military duty, unless he wins a major or something. So I'll root for him there. The players don't count, so sorry, Siwoo. I never have too much interest in him. Harold Varner, not the third on DraftKings. He's missed the cut here 3 years running, but 3 weeks running, he's had fantastic finishes, all top 25s. Sixth at the Mayakoba Classic. And if you go back, all the way back to the Greenbrier Classic, he's missed one cut in, 10 events. And he's had six top 15s at the mark. Well, seven top 17s. I'm trying to p-hack nicely here. And just to show you, I mean, just go look at the game. Go look at the logs. Look at the field rank tracker. You can find that shit on dfsarmy.com. Use promo code TACO, of course, to support the pod. Always got to throw that in there. This is a little pocket full of plays I like. I like Harold Varner, 74. I like Denny McCarthy. He's had four straight solid outings. Him and Varner have pretty much the same thing going on. Over the last like 5 or 6 months, they have one bad performance. Other than that, all super, super solid performances. And I think McCarthy goes a little underlooked, so I'm going to be all over McCarthy. And another guy that I'm going to be all over is Bud Cauley. He missed the cut pretty badly at the RSM Classic, but before that, he had some solid finishes here. Well, here, this at this event in particular, he's so good. Three straight top 15s, a third in 2017. He seemed to have shaken off his injury woes, so bring on the collie. I will roster a lot of these $7,400 dudes. And then another course history guy that everyone's going to forget about, Bill Haas. He's not been good in his last two tournaments. I'll give him that. And he missed the cut here last year. But before that, 17th, 9th, a win, and a 6th place finish. And another missed cut. And if you go back a little further this year, you see a 14th at Sanderson Farms, a 10th at the Safeway. I mean, he's definitely gotten worse. Don't get me wrong here. He had a stretch from the PGA Championship, or the Travelers through the PGA Championship, where he missed like 5-6 cuts in a row. But 14th at the Fort Worth Invitational, 7th at the RBC Classic. He's kind of striking out of nowhere. He used to just always be the guy you would lock in for T44. Now that's not really the case. And he has a few courses where he has course history up. He's one of those guys where those few courses, it's like ZJ, like, or Stricker, you know, with the John Deere Classic, like those courses where he has the history at, his history is just insane. It's unbelievable. So, yeah, going to be playing some Haas to be sneaky. I think he's going to be the lowest owned of all the guys talked about here in this range. And if you want to throw another guy in that range in, Jason Duffner, three straight made cuts in the win back in 2016. But he's been so bad. He's been so bad. I don't know if I can even pull the trigger there. Laird starts off the 7-3 range, along with Brian Gay, former winner here, who followed that up with three straight missed cuts. But I've been playing pretty decently lately. Laird's kind of a statistics play. He makes a lot of cuts, but he doesn't really do too much with them. But did have the 7th back at Sanderson Farms not too long ago. Pat Perez, 6th at the Maricopa Classic, 7th at the CJ Cup, if you want to take a shot at him. Kind of a good lines value there, so he might get a little bit of love. Russell Henley, and I'm really interested there. I don't care what the odds say there. A name we're going to hear a bit about this week, I'm sure. Anders Albertsen, $7,200. His last four events, made the cut in all of them. 15th most recently, the RSM Classic, and 5th back at the Sanderson Farms. Now, these are some really, you know, garbage events, but this is a rookie. He started off his PGA Tour with missing the cut at the Safeway Open, but since then, it's been pretty rock solid, and, you know, one of the leaders here in this field in greens regulation percentage, and over his last 25, or pretty much all the rounds he's ever played, strokes gained approach, 0.87 strokes gained on average. That's best in the field for someone with a good sample size, quote unquote good. So there's reason to be on Albertsen for sure. I wouldn't, you know, pile too much onto him, but he does seem to be a rookie with some real promise. You've got Mr. Steady Nick Watney over there, made 83% of his cuts last year, low key. And Chris Kirk, also same price, made 80% of his cuts last year. Quite low-key, too. He even had some sneaky, like, top 10s, top 15s that everyone's forgotten about by now at this point. Harris English has been playing good recently over the last month or so, but if you go back farther than that, it is just crap, so I would avoid him. As you go down, Brunson Burgoon has good course history here, but I would only play him specifically in round 3 showdown. He's like Billy Horschel for me in first round showdown. Like, that is how I play him, because for some reason his splits are insane. Then Andrew Landry, looking like good odds line value here at 80-1. Second place here last year, but the dude is just in awful form. He won in Texas, and that's pretty much all he's done this season. Other than that, it's just missed cuts. He's missed half his cuts. Can't really do anything well statistically. Loses about 4.5 birdies to the field each tournament. Loses 5 fantasy points to the field on average. Just no thank you. Now back to this George Cunningham guy. Obviously, you're going to play him on FanDuel just as a punt. He only has 2 events he's played on the PGA Tour. 36th at the Shriners and 29th at the Canadian Open. The Canadian Open numbers, I would say they're going to be inflated because of all the Eagles and all that stuff. Maybe some of the raw fantasy points, like per hole numbers, might be a little bit skewed on him, but he's not even on there yet because he doesn't have enough rounds. But he's another... we'll see as we go kind of guy, because his numbers so far are just kind of off the charts. A lot of it might do or be due to playing these really easy bombers courses, but I do field adjust all these stats as well to kind of to neutralize the effects of those sort of things. But you know, whenever it's a guy with a low sample size, you can't like go in on him. I know he's looked good statistically and all that, but you never want to go in on anyone that's got like just 8 rounds of shot link data. That's not really a smart move. Might as well pivot over to Nate Lashley for the same price. He's made 5 straight cuts going all the way back to the Byron Nelson. And a lot of them being top 30s, top 40s, a few top 20s during this swing season here. So just a guy, you know, just randomly take a flyer out there. Then I'm just going to briefly touch over the big low 7-6K guys that are going to just be major factors this week for sure. Before sending you guys off, and we're going to start off at the $7,100 range. This is going to be some important plays come from here. You've got Johnny Vegas, who unfortunately starts at the stadium course, but he is the best lines value of all of these guys so far. And whenever scoring is in play, he likes to do just that. Maybe not so much as of recently, but that had always been his sort of play style. He destroys par fives, won at Glen Abbey, the RBC the Canadian Open. I think he won at a different course. No, I think he won at Glen Abbey twice, actually. I think he defended at Glen Abbey. So that's the only course that gives up more eagles than La Quinta. So I'm sure he'll have something to say for La Quinta. Definitely a guy who's looking to eagle out there. 11th here last year as well. But I'm more interested in Ryan Armour and Jason Kokrak. Same price. Now, Armour, I think he's going to be the most popular out of the bunch. He's just been playing so well. Let's go by the field ranks here for Mr. Armour. He's, oh my gosh, I hate scrolling. Should have just controlled F it, but you know what? I found it. So, Mr. Armour here has his most recent field ranks 85%, 91%, 85%, 60%, 63%, 58%. You got to go all the way back to the playoffs and those super strong fields to find his first event where he actually finished in the back half. But the Wyndham Championship, 95%, Greenbrier Classic, 87%, and just goes on from there, 65%, 82%, 89%. From there, you know, as you go farther back, it does get a little more up and down. But Armour is, he's sort of like a younger Jason Gore type, just raw ball striker, driving accuracy sort of dude. But it just works for him. Has not worked for him here at this course. In his last 3 attempts, two missed cuts and a T66. Not incredible, but he has flashed upside. 8th at the Wyndham Championship. 14th at the Fort Worth Invitational, you know. And over the last 3 weeks, those top 25s in a row. And the key stat that I'm looking for this week, or at least one of them, the wedge shots from 50 to 125 yards. Last year, he ranked 3rd in that category, best of anyone in this field. So Armour's someone I've got my eye on. And then Kokrak, I think, is just sneaky. His game log doesn't look great right now. He didn't really play too much in the swing season. When he did, it wasn't that great. But if you just cut to the regular season, and again, you're going to look at some of the playoff stuff here. So let me just use the field ranks here for Mr. Kokrak. Last three have been 50%, 13%, 45%. Admittedly, pretty bad. I mean, that's the swing season. Go back farther than that, and it goes 73%, 76%, 66%, 63%, 88%, 93%. Then 24% at the Open Championship in Britain. I mean, that's not surprising at all. And 99% at the Greenbrier. Then 1% at the Memorial. Just terrible there. Just awful. I mean, Kokrak, he's a big hitter. He can do that sort of thing. But really impressive form that people might have forgotten about from the later end of last year. Now, has just completely tailed off and gone away? Maybe. But it's a risk I'm willing to take. He was 8th here last year. And 8th here back in 2013 as well. So I don't mind riding with Kokrak a little bit. Then the last guys to talk about here, Brandon Harkins at $6,900, a little bit underpriced, but he rates out really well for the course and specifically. Just going to see why that is real quick. It looks like it's because of his It's just short par 5 scoring. I did forget to mention up to this point that there are 11 short par 5s on this course compared to the 5 long ones. It's just a super short course. So the guys who just gain insane amounts of strokes on those short par 5s, you know, Sabatini, unfortunately, I'm seeing John Rahm and Aaron Wise right there. And I have to rethink my whole life and stuff, but I'm still trying to fade those guys on purpose. But Justin Rose, Brandon Harkins, these are the guys that rate out the highest in this specific stat. And even if you go to the short par 4s, the median length par 4s, Harkins still rates out pretty well in those. He's just good at fantasy scoring. Maybe not so much at cut making. He missed a lot of cuts recently. But he does love to fantasy score. So maybe more of a showdown play than anything. And then Ryan Blom down there at 6'8". Sam Saunders also 6'8". Both some pretty decent targets to go after. I like Blom's stats. I like Saunders' fit for the course. And he was 8th last year here as well. The one course history play I'm so not using is Seamus Power. Or Seamus Power. 11th and 21st in the last 2 years here. But his form, outside of a few random pop-up top 20s, has been, like, bad. Like, bottom of the field bad. So, yeah, I'll pass on him. That's, yeah, no thanks. Kramer Heacock looked interesting. He's just one of those young guys that, who knows, just so happens to rate out the field pretty strongly. And I'm sure that a lot of that's just due to a lower sample size. He has, what, 12 shot length rounds? It's not horrible, but it's not great at all. Going down into the $6,600 range, well, no real plays there. Maybe Alex Prue, who's been drifting. He's gone from 201 to 1 to 176 to 1 now, and it's the approach stats, really, that have been pretty good for him. And also good on par 72s. But let's scroll on down. Actually, there are two course history guys, two guys that have finished top 20 in the last 2 years I'm not touching. Yeah, that's Grayson Murray. He's withdrawn from 3 of the last 5 tournaments that he's played. And has another withdrawal back at the Byron Nelson. And these are like rage quits. The dude cannot even handle himself. He was playing decently in the middle of the season, then got hurt. And since then, it's been just awful. It's been abysmal. I wouldn't get near him. Down here at 6'5", Sebastian Munoz. Easily the best player from this range. A lot of people realize that. 10th last week. I did miss the cut pretty horribly at the RSM Classic. I mean, this is a scrub we're talking about, so maybe a showdown sort of guy, you know, or just a low-owned play to go on with here. Maybe to move off of Svensson, who I don't have rated too highly here yet. And the last two guys we're going to talk about here, because I'm not going to talk about why Max Homa is drifting. He's so bad, I'm not even going to worry about it. Those guys are... I know they are. I just need to freaking find them. My scroller is kind of weird. Johnson Wagner at $6,300. One of my favorite plays. The dude has made, what, a billion straight cuts? His worst finish this year is T89 at the St. Jude Classic. So he missed the cut by, one or two strokes at the most? And this is Johnson Wagner we're talking about. Like, if you go back past, like, this last year where he's been an insane cut maker... He's an insane cut misser for like his whole career before that. He had one tournament. I forgot where it's at. He missed like 8 straight cuts in a row and then he won it. Like that's the kind of player that Wagner is. He's like James Hahn, just like so streaky. But this streak he's been on has been going on for like a year of just cut making. He made 88% of his cuts last year and he's $6,300. It doesn't make any sense. He's made all of his swing season cuts as well. Last week, he wasn't the greatest during the weekend. Ended up T67 in Sony, but still, he made the dang cut. I mean, if you just want a cut for almost minimum price, Wagner's your dude. Also, kind of eyeing Tyler Duncan here at the same price, but I promised I'd only talk about two guys here. And the last guy, of course, not of course, but you know, Dominic Bozzelli. Rating out really well. 5th here in 2017, but missed the cut last year. I think he was in a spout of really bad form this time last year, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, it kind of shows. He was 99th at the Waste Management, 112th at the Pebble Beach. Then had a really, really awful summer, but he did have a little swing there like the Genesis Honda Classic, Valspar, where he had some pretty good finishes. But over the last 5 weeks, he's played four times and made the cut every single time. 11th at the RSM Classic, where he also had some course history. Bazzelli has this weird, like, I've noticed ever since he showed up on tour, it's like he'll get a random top five, top 10, and then just kind of chill out for a while. But it's like always at the courses where he's sort of done it before. I know his course history isn't really established too much yet, but just something interesting. And then, screw, I'll throw one more guy out there. Tyler Gooch has been really great with his stroke scanned approach recently. Just check it out. But that's got to be all for me. It is time for me to go. It's 6 o'clock. I will see you guys next week. We'll continue pumping out additions to the research station. Still going to put a bunch of showdown tools and features out there. Streamlining everything so it's instant. I can look at in-round stats now, which are pretty cool. You used to always have to wait till the end of an event before exporting crap. Now I can just view it all live. So be looking to add some maybe some showdown or weekend tools to help further assist us, and just keep on making the research station, domination station, the best it can be for PGA Tour golf. And what do we have in exactly 1 month and 1 day from now? Daytona 500. So my NASCAR people, only a month away. What are you doing? We are the best daily fantasy NASCAR site out there. I will throw that out there. No one covers Xfinity better than us. We cover every single Xfinity event, even though qualifying is right before practice. Every single Saturday I'm on that. I've never missed a slate. So if you want Xfinity NASCAR coverage, of which the fields are still pretty weak over there, we're raking in money constantly. If you want to come and join in on this, and of course you want to hop in right now and just, golf is about to kick off majorly. Just come check out this research station. It's amazing. You will not regret it. And of course the domination station lineup optimizer for all of your lineup optimization and mass multi entry needs. Come check us out at dfsarmy.com. You can use the link in the description. Just throw down promo code TACO to let them know I sent you and to support the pod. I mean, come on, it's free. You're listening to this. I'm entertaining you. Hopefully, I've been trying to. You want access to all of these cool stats that aren't not just something you can just grab and run away with, but something that's like just constantly updating, getting better and awesomer, and just keep trying my best to every day, just adding tons of depth to my work. And I take great pride in my work, and I want you guys to join our army. We're getting stronger and stronger. There's so many of us. I see us all over the leaderboards now. I'm sure you have if you've spent any time on DraftKings GPPs. Just scrolling through. You know who we are. Come join the army. We're not going to make you do sit-ups or anything. We might make you drop and do 20 lineups. So I'll see you guys next week. It's been fun. I am so glad that golf is back and ready to get on with the rest of the season here. And I'll see you guys next week. Later.
Thank you for listening to the DFS Army podcast. Join the DFS Army today and gain access to our private Slack chat, where you can chat with real DFS pros and coaches, as well as other DFS Army members with winning track records. Also included in your membership is access to our premium articles, DFS Army weighted projections for every sport we offer, from NFL to MMA, weekly player picks and cheat sheets, the strategy vault of timeless concepts, and the DFS Army Domination Station, a truly state-of-the-art lineup optimizer offering your personal projections or ours. The DFS Army membership is the best value across the industry. Join today and get two free ebooks, as well as the secrets to unlocking a new level to your game.